DraftKings Sportsbook is not only my favorite sportsbook, but also America's top-rated sportsbook. Speaking of America, our top athletes are over in Tokyo competing for the gold. And DraftKings has a medal-worthy offer just for my listeners. Listen to this great offer. Place any pre-event wager of $1 to be eligible to cash $100 in free credits if America wins any medal this year. That's 100-to-1 odds on American athletes to stand on the podium and receive gold, silver, or bronze this week. 100-to-1 odds on an offer like this doesn't come around often, so sign up for DraftKings Sportsbook now to get in on all the action. I love using DraftKings Sportsbooks. It's really easy to navigate, has plenty of instructions for new bettors, and nearly limitless ways to get in on all the action. My friends and family have been loving DraftKings Sportsbook, and I know you will too. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code THPN when you sign up to turn $1 into $100 in free credits if America wins a medal. That's code THPN to turn $1 into $100 in free credits for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in Indiana, 1-800-9-WITH-IT.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Want to go, pretty boy?
Two minutes by yourself and you feel shame, you know, and then you get free.
The only thing better than a glass of beer is tea with Miss McGill.
And welcome to the Fourth Line Voice Podcast. My name is Darren. Thank you very much for tuning in. Episode 127 of the big show, some enforcer-based podcasting coming at you, brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network. How's everybody doing out there? Another wild Wednesday, midweek, hump day as they call it. So thank you very much for tuning in, whether, no matter where it may be, on the commute, on the train ride to work. Are you hiding in your cubicle? Trying to stay away from Bethany. You don't want to hear about the boil on her cat's ass. So you got your headphones on. You're in the back eating your Spam. Ducking down. Relax. You're on break. Sit back. Let the sights and the sounds fly through the air. And here we go. But guys, I will tell you this, as you're listening to this, you know where I am? I am at the lake, perhaps hopefully on the boat or out fishing, swimming in the lake, whatever. All I know is I'm not at work and I'm on vacation. So what I'm doing, of course, I'm not recording this from the lake. I had recorded this interview earlier, and I'm doing this intro on a Saturday and getting it all together, and I'm going to fire it over to the network boys, and they're going to upload this Wednesday, and it's like I've been here the whole time. There you go. The magic of the internet. Teleporting me. But no, even though I'm on vacation, I'm still working for you folks. The voice of the people. I'm here for the people. No, I thank you very much for tuning in. I have a very fun guest today. Harrison Harper. Young guy. Normally, I said all my guys that I interview in the 80s and 90s, they played. This guy's currently playing. Well, he played last year. He's not quite sure what he's going to do this year. But I think it's a really cool... you got to get the young guns in here. Give them a it's a different generation, maybe a different look on things. Although it's oddly enough, me and old Double H, we sort of view things the same. Actually, I said I think Harrison he came along two decades too late. Maybe he would have loved the 80s or the 90s, but it's cool in the fact that Harrison has a unique perspective just due to the fact that he played at all the different levels. He played Junior A, played Major Junior with Lethbridge Hurricanes. Then he went and played college. We got a college graduate. You know, we don't have too many of them on the show. So he played university hockey. And then, of course, he played pro in the Southern Pro League for Birmingham. We cover that. Obviously, we cover his entire career, but we just discuss the differences between the levels, the mindset of each level, and is college hockey with no fighting cleaner than junior or pro hockey? Tune in and find out. I'm not going to give you the answer, but you're getting it right from the horse's mouth. The player's going to tell you. Harrison also started up last year started up his own podcast, and while he had done I've air quotes college radio in Nipissing when he was there, they did kind of a athletic podcast, like a school type podcast, but he broke out on his own and it's called The Podject. And I've listened to a bunch of episodes, and he sort of talks about everything. Really actually doesn't talk about much about hockey at all, but he's an interesting guy, funny dude. He's up there roofing up in Northern Ontario, so I want to thank him again for taking the time to we had talked about doing this episode forever, and he's busier than a one-legged waitress at the IHOP. There we go. I'll date myself with that joke. He's everywhere, so he was hard to pin down, and we had kind of lost touch. And then he just emailed me one night, and he was just like, "Yeah, dude, I got to get on that show." And I was like, "Yeah, you do." So we finally did it, and it was great, and it was fun talking to him. And I know he had been up since like 5:30 or whatever, and he's in Ontario, so it's like a two-hour time difference. And by the time we got done recording, I think it was about midnight. His time, and I think you can hear it a little bit in his voice there. He's getting pretty tired, but I don't blame him. But he trooped it out, and I haven't even looked at the run length. I think it's about an hour 15, hour and a half, something like that. So we put in some time. But if you guys want to check out his tilts, they're all on hockeyfights.com. He was in 8 tilts in 40 games with Lethbridge, and then his pro tilts are on there too. But like I said, he played in the Maritime League with the Miramichi, and talk about that. And I wanted to get more stories from the Knot and Anchor Bar, but I don't think he had any. But we talk about the nightlife in Miramichi. But it was it was just a fun conversation with the young cat here, and I think you guys will really like it. So I'm not going to talk too long today. I hope everybody enjoyed my 2-part Colt King. Of course, as I'm speaking, part two hasn't come out yet. That is coming out on I guess it would have been last Sunday that you're listening to this. My time warp is screwing me up. But, I hope you guys enjoyed the 2-part Colt King. And also, like I always say, check out my back catalog. McIntyre, Marasti, Tedarenko. Definitely check those out. Also, as I said, I'm a member of the Hockey Podcast Network. Over 50 shows on the network. All the NHL teams are represented. Of course, those shows are busy right now with the expansion draft that went on with Seattle and of course, then the NHL draft that's happening this weekend as I'm recording. I picked the worst time to release a two-part Cole King interview. When all that was going on, I felt bad. He kind of got, unfortunately, I think he got buried amongst the NHL bullshit that went on last week. So, you know, but nonetheless, I hope you guys go back if you have not yet and definitely check it out. Cole's a great, great interview. Good dude. A lot of fun to talk to. But going back to the NHL, yeah, so, I mean, those shows will be really busy talking about the draft picks and everything else. And, I don't give a shit. Although, like I said to the one guy, I laughed. I can't remember the kid's name. Ottawa took him in the first round. And, I model my game after Tom Wilson, he says. Oh, okay, well, you know, and I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool, you know. I go and look. Yeah, he's played under 17, like, whatever they call it, the under 17 American team, and then he's in college. Never been in a fight in his life. I'm like, well, how do you model your game after Tom Wilson then when you've never fought? I'm like, oh, okay. But yeah, that's the NHL 2021 hockey right there. I'm gonna model myself, you know, despite never fighting. You know, it's like the guy who goes the season with one goal and says he models himself after Ovechkin. I'm like, oh, well. I'm not knocking the kid or whatever. It struck me funny, you know. And all, like I said, all these draft preview shows and scrolling social media. You got all these clowns talking about the strengths and weaknesses of the draft picks. They've never seen these kids play. I'm not going to say what podcast, whatever. It was nothing on the network. I was just looking and it was like, who was it? Was it San Jose? I don't know, it was some dork with the San Jose website or vlogger or whatever, and he's talking about the new draft pick, and, oh, a big right-handed shot and good stride. No, the fuck would you know? You live in San Jose, you know, like you watched any of these guys play, you know. I just think, oh, you guys are so full of shit. It's just such, it's all just cliche and just the hockey terms. And, oh, yeah, he's got great gap control, great, you know, and the active stick and all this horse shit. And, oh, yeah, but whatever. NHL Draft 2021L. But anyway, check out all the Hockey Podcast Network for all that good stuff. For my off-network friends, of course, Joe Lozito. Get rid of Lozito! Over at the Coliseum Chronicles. He just had the interview with Ben Olson. That was great. Really enjoyed that. Joe's... like I said, I'm kind of ahead of myself, so Joe hasn't... He'll have an episode out on Monday, but I'm like... Again, I'm behind. So, but Joe does a great job. He's got a great back catalog. Mick Fakota, Dean Ewan, Jason Strudwick, Bolton, on and on. Joe does a bang-up job. I know Joe was hanging on every word. Actually, I think him and Alec from Five for Fighting show should team up, maybe do it. Who won the draft? Maybe they could talk and, you know, Joe could take a break from interviewing ex-Islander Zamboni drivers or whatever Islander personnel. No, it'll be ushers from Albany that worked the games when Bridgeport played. That's their Islander connection. That's who Joe's interviewing next. That wasn't bad though. I just came up with that off the top of my head. I didn't even... You know, I've given Joe... look at this. Like, what are we, a couple minutes in here, and I'm giving Joe gold. Gold, Joe. It's gold. That's what I think you should do. The top five Zamboni drivers of Bridgeport. There you go. What am I even saying? I have no idea anymore. I'm just giddy that I'm finally going on holidays. Yeah, I mean, it's not for very long, but nonetheless, I will not have to put on coveralls and get up at 5 o'clock. For a few days anyway. But yes, in all seriousness, Joe does a great job. And definitely check out his show. Alec, back in the game, the Five for Fighting podcast. Out there in Florida. Florida man. Yeah. So you can understand what kind of podcast Florida man will bring you. Yeah, imagine that. Yeah, from the Sunshine State. Living with his enabler. She talked him into it again. So there we go. The Mud Show back on the air. I think he's interviewing Rob Volterra. I think that's his next episode that's coming out. So I'm actually really, I'm really looking forward to that. And, no, it's good. Like I said, it's good to have Alec back. Back, the three of us, the three meatball podcasts are back in action. So that'll be, that's good. Maybe we can take it, overtake these draft clowns, preview clowns. Check out Alec's back catalog. Yablonsky, Ray, Segroy, lots of good stuff there. No. So, Florida Man strikes again. Alec is back in the saddle. Joe's out there cruising around Coney Island. And here I am, out at the lake, feet in the water off the pontoon boat, maybe trolling a little bit. For once, I'm not trolling on social media. I'll be trolling out the back of the boat. It's all good. So I'm going to shut up. I'm going to go on holidays now. I hope you guys enjoy this episode, and I will talk to you on Sunday. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. And here we go with Harrison Harper, Hopsy, coming at you. Thanks, everybody. All right, here we are in the fourth line voice. On the line. Actually, I've been trying to get a hold of this cat for a while. We've been setting this up, but former Western Hockey Leaguer, Maritime Junior A player, college. We got college graduate. Don't have too many college graduates on this show, so this is something different. But on the line, Harrison Harper. Harrison, how are you doing tonight?
Very good, Darren. Thanks so much for having me on. Like you said, it's been a bit of a process making this happen, but it's been an honor to finally get on the show.
No, yeah, we've been talking about it for a while on social media. I said, man, oh man, I mean, I could probably get a hold of, somebody in Congress before I could get Hopsy on the line here. So this is, you're a busy cat, man.
Yeah, no, I don't know, I'm awful with the scheduling kind of things like that. But I honestly think it was like a year ago we were talking about making this happen, and then we kind of just went cold feet on it, and then this past month we started talking again. So again, finally getting on, but it's been good. Yeah, a little bit busy right now, trying to work a lot, but nice to get on and do this with you tonight.
No, I certainly appreciate it. And yeah, like I said, we'll kind of go through your career, we'll talk about a few things, and I got some questions for you. I was catching up on your, and of course Harrison here has his own podcast called the Project, and I was listening to a bunch of episodes today in the truck, and we'll get into all that because I got some questions for you. But first of all, we'll start at the beginning. Where were you born and raised, and played your minor hockey?
So I was born and raised in Calgary, Alberta, and I was a Northwest Calgary kid. So I was kind of grew up like inner city. I played for the Westwood Warriors when I was really young, but then when you get up a little older, I played for like the Northwest. It's called like the Northwest Calgary Athletic Association. Went up through there, and I didn't play. I didn't even play like midget AAA. I played Bantam AAA. I got drafted in the Bantam draft in the Western League, like 12th round, like really late. Like I didn't even think I was going to get drafted, and then, like at the very last second, someone took me, and it was Lethbridge. And I ended up going on and playing a little bit there and having a really good time. But, yeah, I grew up in Calgary. That's where I played my minor hockey, and then kind of took off for junior, played a little junior B. But basically was in Calgary until I was about 16. And unfortunately, the way it's all gone, love Calgary. Haven't really been back, but been back for some summers and whatnot in the past. But, you know, haven't been home in Calgary in a long time. But that's where I grew up and started playing hockey.
Well, yeah, I noticed you. Yeah, you played some double A and stuff, and then it says here you played for the Airdrie Thunder in the Heritage Junior B League. Is that correct?
That was 12th grade year, and that's where I ended up playing. I came back late from Lethbridge one year, and they put in some rule where you couldn't come back after some deadline, so I couldn't play midget AAA. So I ended up playing Junior B up there, and I mean, it was kind of different, but I had a good time. You know, the hockey actually wasn't that bad, so it worked out well.
Okay, so you had gone to you had made Lethbridge first that year?
Well, they kept me around. Like, so when I was 17, I signed with them at a training camp, and I'd always been a defenseman. And then that year, they wanted me to play as a forward in Lethbridge. And so they kept me around for like the first 7 or 8 games of the regular season, and I got scratched for all of them. I played some preseason, though. I played pretty well, had a goal, had a fight, had a pretty good tilt, and then they kept me around for the, like I said, first, I mean, maybe a month and a half, and then they sent me home, and then, like I ended up playing Junior B that year and in the Heritage League, in the Thunderdome in Airdrie, it was called, and it was actually a sweet spot, great group of guys, and we had a pretty good team that year, so that was fun. It was weird, though, so I'd go back, and I'd play D when I was playing Junior B, and then Lethbridge would, like, call me up at Christmas time, and ended up calling me 2 different times that year, and, like, they just kept sending me back, but I kept getting called up and playing forward for Lethbridge, and then I'd get sent back and play Junior B as a defenseman, so it was kind of funny, but, well, it was the only time in my life I played forward was when I did play in Lethbridge, but, I took a run at the role, you know, they wanted me to mix it up a little bit and throw and fight a bit, and I mean I did that a little bit to a degree. I wish I did it more, probably would have helped me last a little bit longer in the league, but I mean I had fun doing what I did there when I was there, and it was a really good time when I got to play in the Western League. I mean, I've got nothing but good things to say about that league. It was such a good time.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, when you were coming in, I mean, you know, you're a late bantam pick. I mean, you know, I'm not disrespect, but you were. And then, you know, you're kind of a, you know, they want you to move you up to forward. I was going to say, did they sort of impress upon you that, without saying it, that if you fought, you would maybe stick around more? Or did you sort of just sort of, you decide that on your own?
Well, it's funny how it happened. Like, when I got drafted so late. And I remember I was, like, joking around with some of my buddies. I was like, yeah, they took me so late. Like, they're going to turn me into, like, a right winger or something like that and try to get me to play in the fourth line. It was kind of like a joke I always made. Like, no disrespect to that role at all. Like, that's exactly what ended up happening to me. And I think it was – I played when I was, like, my first two – because, you know, the Bantam draft, you're so young. So, like, yeah. 15, you go to camp. You're not going to make the team, and especially as a 12th-round pick. Like, I think I talked to, like – the Western scout, as I walked out the door, like, no one even said a word to me other than him, and he just said, like, you know, you had a good camp, come back. Year after, I kind of, like, I really wanted to make, I don't know, I didn't think I was going to make the team at 16, but, like, I was in camp, like, trying my best, too, and I was playing really hard, and I remember I was throwing the body around a bit, and I think they kind of got an idea that I might be a little bit, you know, might be kind of guy that might want to play a little, you know, play some tough minutes kind of thing, and then I remember I was at a spring camp or something like that. I think it was like for the Brooks Bandits or something like that. And I got in a pretty good tilt. And then one of the scouts for Lethbridge was a scout with one of them with Brooks or something like that. But the word ended up getting to him, and they thought, then they kind of put two and two together. And then they were losing one of their older guys that fought a lot. And they called me in the summer, and like they weren't like, felt like, they weren't like, you go, you want to fight, you got to fight every night. But they were like, you know, would you be open to playing forward potentially? Like, I know you're a defenseman, but, you know, we were losing a guy. And it was a guy that fought a lot. So in my head, I was, you know, I'll put two together. And they said, you know, there's a good opportunity for you to, you know, do this and be successful. And then, you know, progress your game from there. And I was kind of like, at the time, I was so down for it. You know, I would do it again for sure, but you know, that was kind of how the conversation started. And it was pretty black and white, but I mean, I knew what was expected going into it, and I agreed to do it. And, you know, there was no resentment there at all. It happened exactly how it should have happened in my eyes.
Yeah, I was going to say, so, like, did you sort of, I mean, were you kind of a physical guy growing up? Like, you know, did it sort of, no one's really fighting in Pee Wee or Bantam or anything, but I mean,
yeah,
like, were you, when, like, kind of when you were going into that, you know, that 18-year-old, you're in Lethbridge, and they're going to move you up to forward, like you said, it's sort of, you know, the writing's on the wall, what they want you to do. Did you take anything to get, like, did you go do any MMA or boxing or anything to get ready for it, or just, shit, here we go?
No, I went, shit, here we go, and that was my biggest mistake. I found with, like, because, you know, I got up there and I was confident. Like, I'd been in a couple fights and stuff like that, and I'd done okay because I was a bigger kid at the time. And yeah. But, like, I remember my first fight ever, like, in a stupid, like, junior A spring camp. Like, I got the shit kicked out of me. And I remember I kind of laughed because I were like, you know, you always think, I was a big kid, always physical, you know, threw my weight around, you know, you always think you're tough, and then you get punched in the face a couple times, you're like, all right, so maybe you're like, you got, it keeps you humble. So I remember, like, I got into it, and then when I got into the Western League, I mean, I was fighting guys, and I think I was doing pretty well. I wasn't fighting, like, real, because I feel like with my, like, I played in, you know, 2011 to 2013, you know, there was, I mean, it's not, even then it wasn't what, it, you know, as crazy as the league has been in the past, but there were still some big, bad dudes in my eyes, especially, that were playing in the league at the time, and, I mean, I fought a couple big guys in my eyes, but, like, you know, I was fighting guys kind of in my category. I was, like, my first full year, I was an 18-year-old rookie, and I think I fought 8 times in 45 games, which, you know, wasn't great, and it wasn't even, like, I think it was probably good for, like, 4th on my team that year. But, you know, it was an awesome league to play in that year. Like, there was a lot of tough guys, you know, games were exciting, and there was always, like, the game inside the game was just hilarious, you know, between the benches, there was a lot of chatter, and it was just a really fun time, so... I mean, I got nothing but good things to say about that league. Like, honestly, I mean, I kind of went off topic there, but, like, it was such a good time playing there.
Well, yeah, and your coach at the time was Rich Preston. How'd you get along with Rich?
I absolutely love Rich Preston. Like, I would, I can think, like, I've had a lot of great coaches over my years, and, I mean, not that I'm sure any of them are ever going to hear this podcast, no disrespect to them, but... I mean, Rich Preston was my favorite. I mean, he was such a beauty, like such a coach's, like a player's coach. Sorry, like he just was like so. Not to sound cliche, but he was like so for the boys. He was such a beauty, and he was just like that old school. The way he communicated, he was so honest with us. Like if you played like shit, he'd tell you. But if you were playing good, he'd tell you. And like, I mean, I wasn't a great player that year. You know, I was more of a fourth line guy in and out of the lineup. I think I played 45 games of 72, and like I don't think I got hurt at all. So I mean, like I was, you know, in and out of the lineup quite a bit. But you know, he always made me feel like, you know, I was still like as big a part of the team as anyone. He was really good to me, and just like he had so many great stories of like, you know, he wasn't one of those guys that just went on and talked about his own career, but he would like mix in the best stories I've ever heard, just like that, and they'd always have something to relate to what was like happening with us and our season. He had such a good memory. He's hilarious. Like they should make a movie about him, and like the guy from Youngblood should play him. What's that, Patrick Swayze? I always thought he looked just like Patrick Swayze. Yeah, he was such a beauty. I loved him, and every guy that I ever know that I played with that's played for him loves him to death. And I don't know if he's still with the, he was at the Anaheim Ducks the last I heard. I don't know if he still is an assistant coach there, but what a treat he'd be for those guys. They must adore him up there too.
Yeah, well, and it was well, like you said, I mean, there's so, you know, I mean, yeah, it's a little later than, you know, than the Brent Myers, Dale Purington, Eric Goddard years in Lethbridge, but I mean still some tough dudes in the league, of course, you know, and just even in your division. I mean, Medicine Hat had, you know, Jake Doty, and that guy, that's a mean dude, man. Doty was
badass. I remember playing him, and I remember that year I had this like rule in my head that I was like, well, I won't ask every, like, because like I knew I had to tilt a bit, and I should have tilted a lot more. Like looking back at it, 8 and 45 was just not enough for the type of player I was. I needed to be like doubling that, tripling that. Like that was, I needed to get those numbers up, and I think that was just a tribute to my lack of confidence at that age. Because I mean, I should have done some more preparation for the boxing, but I had this rule in my head that I was never going to say no. But then I remember, like, thankfully, Jake Doty never asked me to tilt. And we played in the same division, played them a lot. And I mean, he was, like, effective in that league. He wasn't just a tilt. He didn't just fight. Like, he played in the first line. He had, like, a couple 30-point years. Like, I remember a lot of guys used to, like, chirp him about his skill. I'm like, what do you mean his skill, man? He put up 30 points and he can beat up anyone in the league. I'm like, I think a lot of us would like to be like that if we could. And, I mean, the guy's still playing. I don't know where he's playing now. He's all over the place. He's in the AHL. He's playing in, like, the British League. Like, the guy's carved out an amazing career for himself. I mean, power to him. I don't know him personally, but I got a lot of respect for that guy playing one against him 1 year in that division. I mean, never got the chance to fight him. I mean, looking back at it now, would have loved to, but at the time, probably made the right call.
Yeah, no, yeah, he played, yeah, in the Ontario Reign in the American League this year, and yeah, he had some big fights, and of course, another guy is Mitch Meraz, and, you know, Joel Edmondson was in the league, and with Keegan Kanzig, and, you know, there was some tough dudes, Mitch, you know, Keegan Lowe, there were some tough dudes in the league that year.
Yeah, there were some tough guys. I mean, I think the toughest guy I fought that year would definitely have to be, I'd say, Dalton Thrower. I fought him once in Saskatoon. I thought he was a pretty tough guy. He used to fight pretty much a lot of people. It seemed a lot of tough dudes, and he gave it to me pretty good one night on like in front of like a legitimate packed house in Saskatoon. Like the place was like, I think it was sold out. It was Hockey Day in Canada. They had some big promotion. Me and him squared up, and he gave it to me pretty good. It was pretty funny. You know, we see the video, but I mean, yeah, he was a pretty tough dude. There was a lot of tough dudes. I mean, every team that was good in that league had multiple tough dudes, and that was just the way it was. In my eyes, it was a heavy game, and it was fun. It was a very fun game to be a part of. It was very entertaining. There were so many like games inside of the game where, you know, you bring in that aspect of guys that. All these guys could play too, but there's a lot of tough guys, and there's a lot of, I mean, in my eyes, there's some theatrics that was going on between whistles and stuff like that. That was awesome. It was just fun to be around and be a part of. There's not many leagues like that, right? And not as many I've been a part of to this date anymore. That's for sure.
No, absolutely. One of the guys I wanted to ask you about, you talked early on in the year you played the 8 games with Lethbridge, or you were up and down with them. One of the guys on the team was Brody Sutter.
Yeah.
Of course, legendary from the Sutter family. What's it like that whole, cause you know, being, you know, Alberta and stuff, what the Sutter vibe, did he give off the Sutter vibe?
Yeah. Well, I mean, not that I know many other Sutters, but he was the only one that I've ever come in first, you know, close contact with, but I thought he definitely gave up the Sutter vibe, just because, I mean, that family is just so legendary.
I don't think people,
I've lived in Ontario, I've been in the Maritimes too. Like, they get how cool the Sutter family is, but, like, I don't know, there's more of an aura around it out west, I feel.
Oh, completely.
But, what's that, sorry?
Oh, no, completely. I mean, that's why I brought it up. I mean, you know, in that Alberta, yeah. In that Viking area in Western Canada, I mean, especially in the Western Hockey League in that area, you know, the Sutters all played for Lethbridge at some point, and it's just like, oh, yeah, it's just so legendary, their name.
Yeah, and he was, I mean, he definitely, I thought he gave up the Sutter the vibe. If I'm not mistaken, it was Rich's son, is Brody, I believe. But he was a good guy. He was a really nice kid, and I believe he's still playing to this day. I'm not sure. He played a couple games in the NHL, I know that, but never ended up making it full time. But no, he's a great guy, and yeah, he definitely kind of gave off that Sutter vibe. But he wasn't cocky about it or anything like that. He was a really good guy. I really enjoyed him. Haven't seen him in years.
Yeah. No. Yeah. He's playing over in Germany. That season in the Western League, like you said, you had a couple tilts. You're 18. Well, another name I wanted to bring up, and of course, for the Islander folks out there, Rich Pilon, his son Ryan Pilon, played with you. And I believe he was like 15 at the time when you were there.
Yeah. Well, the 1 year when I was up and down. At the end of the year, I was up there, and then they brought him in and for a couple games, and he was 15. If I'm not mistaken, that's how it went down. But I remember just, like, from the moment I saw him, and then I played a full year with him in 16, like, the kid was smooth. Like, he was such a good player, like, skated with ease. Like, he got drafted, I don't know what round it was, but he was I think he was an Islanders pick.
He was, yep.
And he could have been a NHL player in my eyes, no doubt. And I don't know why he ended up stopping playing the year after he was done hockey, I'm not sure. I never really kept in touch with him, but he was a beauty. He was a great guy, and forget where he was from, somewhere in Saskatchewan, good Saskatchewan boy. And yeah, I don't know why he stopped playing. It's a shame, honestly, because I think that guy could have been a legit NHLer, no doubt.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what happened there, but yeah, I think he just didn't want to do it anymore, I guess. But yeah, he was. I heard he's quite the prospect. But so the following year, you pack up and you head out to the Maritimes, to Miramichi. How did you end up in the Maritime Hockey League?
It was kind of hilarious, honestly. So I was at camp with Lethbridge that year. Rich Preston wasn't the coach anymore, and they brought in Drake Barahowski, and he was the coach there. And I ended up getting let go right at the end of training camp. And I was pretty choked because I was, like, looking to come in and have, like, a big year. I thought I was, like, for sure there, like, and, like, ready to go. And I thought they wanted me there. So I was really choked. And I didn't know what to do. And I really didn't want to go back to Junior A. Like, I thought I had a, I don't know why. For some reason, I wanted to keep playing Major Junior. So I ended up getting on the phones with some people I knew. And I ended up getting in contact with the St. John Sea Dogs in the Quebec League. And they ended up calling me. I ended up talking to them. I knew of a guy that they brought over from out west, and he was a 20-year-old, and they were keeping him as a 20-year-old, and I was, in my head, I was like, wow, we're bringing this guy over and keeping him as a 20-year-old, like, maybe I'll just call them. Like, I was only 19 at the time, so I was like, see what they say. They ended up signing me to, like, I don't know what it's called. Like, they ended up signing me to something. I remember signing something, whatever that means, and then they said that they couldn't bring me right in to camp, or they couldn't bring me right in because camp just ended. But if I played with a Junior A team in the area, it'd be really easy to get called up. And then they mentioned that I should go to this place called Miramichi. There's a good contact there, and I just kind of laughed because that's where my mom and dad are from. So it just was like a really hilarious turn of events. And then I was like, second I heard I could go back to Miramichi and play there, which I never thought I would be playing junior there, I said yes in a second and ended up having a really good time. And I even got, like, after I was there, I could have went back to the Western League. I got a couple calls, and then I was already out there, and I was already having such a good time. I was playing D again, playing a lot, and I just kind of said fuck it, and I just stayed and had a really good time out there for 2 years.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, yeah, it's always one of, I always want to get out. I've never been out to the Maritimes. I always want to get out there. But like you said, you had a good time. Just the Junior A out there in the Maritimes, what did you think of the league and how, like, just overall, what was I've heard it's pretty rough hockey out there.
Yeah, no, honestly, it was, I played a little bit in the Alberta Junior League. Like, I played a handful of games for Okotoks 1 year and played a couple of games for Grand Prairie 1 year. And so I knew what it was kind of like. I knew what the vibe was. I kind of stuck around camps with some teams and stuff like that. And that's where majority of my friends who I grew up with obviously ended up playing in the Alberta League, being from there. But the vibe was just completely different in the Maritime League. Like, you know, the Alberta League, every kid thinks they're getting an NCAA scholarship kind of thing, you know what I mean? And
yep.
I kind of feel like if you played, this was like, and I'm speaking from my own experience, and this could be wrong to some people or not, but kind of felt like it was kind of, you know, I mean, not frowned upon, but they didn't want guys that wanted to, like, they didn't want a guy that wanted to go to Major Junior, you know what I mean? Because they don't want to develop a guy that's going to just take off to go play Major Junior. They'd rather have a guy that wants to commit to stay there. And then, like, it seemed like if you came back from Major Junior, I mean, I feel like you're, in some ways, unless you were really good, it was kind of like you were interrupting the team's plans. Those are the vibes I'd gotten. But then in the Maritime League, it was just like they didn't care. Like, they wanted as many Major Junior guys as they could get. And all the younger kids that were playing there were all just trying to get to the queue. And it was honestly, like, there's not many scholarships coming out of that league. So, like, no one even, like, there's not even a thought about NCAA hockey. So I guess just the aura around that was a little different. I found the game was a little heavier. Like, every team carried, like, quite a few, like, tougher guys. And this, like, every, like, the good teams had big guys and guys that would fight. And, I mean, it was a really fun league. And we got great crowds and great little towns in that league. And such, like, a hidden gem. Like, I mean, I talk really highly of it. And I feel like a lot of my friends know about it because, I mean, I speak about it. But I don't think it gets the recognition it deserves. I mean, that league's a really good league. And, I mean, to this day, I feel like I don't know how much they're making kids pay for junior hockey these days, but I know for a fact it's sure a hell of a lot less out there. I can guarantee it. So, I mean, I got nothing. That league is a hidden gem. The Maritime League is unbelievable.
When you're in your two seasons out there, what was your favorite barn, away barn to play in? And get it going with the crowd.
There's a good one that, I mean, honorable mention would be Summerside, because they've been trying to get a Q team, I guess, there for years. Like, they had a legitimate, a major junior caliber rink, like, better than half the teams in the Western League. The place was unbelievable. But the best place to play in that league is by far Yarmouth. And it's literally like Yarmouth is at the very end of the Trans-Canada Highway. Like, it just ends because it's like the tip of the fucking Canada. Like, it's done. Like, it's just ocean after that. And they have this team called the Yarmouth Mariners out there.
Yep.
And their rink's called the Fishbowl, and it's just got like seating on one side and then like one end.
Tremendous.
And it's just like hilarious, and it's so loud in there. Some good times, some good, like, seen some good fights in there. I mean, yeah, that place is unbelievable. I recommend, if anyone's ever doing a trip out in the Maritimes, I mean, I don't think many people are going to put Yarmouth on their list. No shame to Yarmouth, but if you're ever a big hockey fan, go out and watch some of these Maritime League games, because it's actually a really good league, and there's some hilarious towns to go check out. Some to do, anyway.
Well, yeah. So when you're in Miramichi and, you know, you wrap up the game, the boys are going to go for it. Where do you go? I looked it up. I looked a few places up. Is there's like the Knot and Anchor and O'Donohue's and the Boulevard? Where's the hip place to go? Where are the kids going, Harrison?
So I was really lucky because, like I said, my family was from there. And, like, my mom comes from a huge family of, like, 8 siblings. And a lot of them were pretty local, so I had like a bunch of several cousins that were around my age. So I got to I'd already kind of knew a lot of people because of like going there in the summers and whatnot. So when I was back in Miramichi, it was like best case because I was like finally around all these people that I knew growing up, and like we were all able to drink. And then and I just kind of like I kind of feel like I not to sound like hilarious, but I feel like I kind of had like an in with the local crowd.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It was best case scenario, and then like I got to hang out with all the boys on the team, and there was this place called Mike's, and it was literally like the Civic Center where the Miramichi Timberwolves play. It's on the corner, and Mike's is literally on the opposite side of the intersection, like diagonally across. So half the time, I'd wear my suit to the game, but we had like our lockers in the back hallway, and we'd always have just like, I'd have like street clothes already in there, and we'd just like, you know, go into some guy's car and polish off a couple of beers, and then we'd walk across the parking lot when it was time, and we'd get into Mike's and hang out there till they'd kick us out, and we'd stumble along somewhere, because that league was the best. It just worked out. Our home games were always on the same night in that league, and in Miramichi, our home games were Saturday night. So usually it worked out that we'd either be on the road during the week, but we'd always have Sunday off, and we'd always be home on Saturday night. So it was hilarious. We'd basically go to Mike's every night, every Saturday night. And then there was a bunch of good little drinking spots in that town. Like, it was such a great spot to play. Like, there's a little spot called the Boulevard. Like, I heard you mention that. We used to go there all the time. It was literally just it's like a hallway with a bar on the one side and the left side. Like, just a bar. Like, there's some seating in the wall behind it. But it was just one of those places that was no food, little vending machine in the back, and just sold booze and beer. And it was unbelievable. And then you cross the river because his town's built around the river. And there's like O'Donohue's. There's a, you could do a lap of the place. There was great pool halls. Like, I mean, there's very big drinking culture out there. I mean, that's what it seems like a lot of people. A lot of people like to do with their spare time. So
yeah,
the bars are unbelievable out there.
Well, I laugh because when I was just like, oh, I'm going to hit him with a few bar names to see what he says. And like, I just type in like Miramichi bar. And the first one that came up that was like the Knot and Anchor. And I'm like, well, there's like the greatest, like if there wasn't a maritime name, there it is right there. I'm like, That's awesome.
Yeah. They like to embrace that pretty good. It's a good spot. The Maritime, we got New Brunswick is a hidden gem, and the Maritimes in general, just unbelievable. Nothing but good things there.
Yeah, I got to get out to the Maritimes. We, the wife and I have talked about that for a while. We got to do that. But I know you did have a playoff tilt, I see, versus Kyle Haas. How did that go?
So Kyle Haas is one of my like really good buddies. We grew up in Calgary. He grew up in Calgary, and I went to school with him growing up. Played Bantam with him 1 year, and I still keep in touch with him to this day. So he's one of my good buddies, and I'd actually fought him once before in like a spring camp for a junior A team. So he was like, I mean, Kyle's tough as nails, and like he's gone on and he's still tough. He just signed with Dundee the other day, so I didn't know he was going to go back and keep playing because like he's been trying to become a boxer. Like this guy's like a legit nail. But when I fought him, it was pretty funny. Like, I don't know. It was after the buzzer in a like you said, the playoffs. So we ended up both getting suspended. Our teams got fined. It turned out to be hilarious, but I mean, wasn't a crazy tilt or anything. But we were both trading some blows. It was pretty funny. But like I said, it's one of my good friends. So I feel like when I know a guy like that, like I mean, you can't be scared of your buddy, right? So, I mean, I would fight him today, even though he'd probably beat the wheels off me nowadays. He's been doing pretty well for himself, it seems like, with the fists.
Well, after you wrapped up a couple of years there in the Maritimes, you hit the university scene in Nipissing. How did the 5 years there with the Lakers? How did you choose that college, or did that college choose you? What happened there?
Well, I was trying to, like, I wanted to play in U Sports. That was my plan, and I was kind of panning out some options. I was going to go to Mount Royal in Calgary and stay, go back home. But Mount Royal, like, was new to the league, and, you know, those big city teams, like, that's where everyone wants to play. So they're just signing, like, really good, like, major junior guys that had, like, you know, good five-year careers. And, I mean, no shame to myself, but I know how it goes. So I could see where I was lining up in the depth chart. And I was going to go to State, and I was going to go that way, but then I was going to end up doing like a 2-year diploma, and I thought, is that a waste of time? And then Nipissing was offering me, and they wanted me to come in. They kept saying that I'd play a lot. So I was like, well, I didn't know anything about Ontario, or especially Nipissing or North Bay in general. So I kind of, in my head, I was like, I'd had a good time out there in the Maritimes, and I'd already been to Lethbridge, and I was like, I've been having a good time kind of like traveling around. I was like, why not check out Ontario? So I went out there, and 5 years later, turned into 7, because I'm still living out there now. I don't live in North Bay. I live down south in southern Ontario now, but I mean, North Bay was a good time, and I liked going to school. Getting my degree was good, and I mean, I was glad I got to play hockey at a high level throughout that time. I mean, university hockey was obviously a little different than the Western League or any level of pro or whatever. So, I mean, it was a good time, though. I mean, I have nothing but good things to say. Great experience, and I'm kind of glad I went that route for sure.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're kind of bouncing around Canada. You're in the West, then you're out in the Maritimes, now you're in the East. You're seeing it all. Yeah, in terms of the university hockey, I mean, I have, I've had Dakota Odgers on the show a couple times. Of course, you played against him. He was at Carleton. What was, like, coming from the Western League and, of course, Junior A and everything else? So now for the listeners out there in Canadian hockey, you can wear half visor. You're not wearing full cages. It's half visors. So it's a little different in that sense from the NCAA, but still no fighting or anything. Did you find, like, I know Dakota's feelings on it. What were your feelings on college hockey? Like, I mean, he said it was obviously it's great hockey and, you know, high end, but in terms of the no fighting and stuff and all that, how frustrating was that for you?
Well, I thought it was pretty wild. Like, I remember I'll never forget it. Like, I tell this story to people all the time when they ask me, like, this question about it. Mm-hmm. I always say, like, the first exhibition game I ever played in, I remember I was so sore after. And, like, I was, like, kind of, like, talking to my buddy, and I was like, man, like, I'm so sore. And he's like, yeah, he's like, you're going to be sore in this league. He's like, because, like, people are going to do the dumbest shit to you you've ever seen in your life. Because, like, everyone is a hero, and it was so true. Like, the first exhibition game, like, you know, you're getting, like, cross checks from guys that, like, would never do that, or just kind of like dirty, more dirty, chippy stuff I found. And then, like, I mean, you kind of learn how to adapt to that. And then it's just weird. Like, I mean, there's guys that are just like, it just totally changes everything. Like, it's hard to explain until you can, like, picture, like, you, and it sucks because, like, the people who it sounds, and I'm not trying to sound like that asshole, but, like, the people who always say they don't understand these, like, what we're saying in these arguments or how it's so different are the ones that have, like, never really seen it for themselves. You know what I mean? Like, it's so evidently, like, the atmosphere is so different when fighting's on Evolve, especially at that level where it's all guys who have played a high level where that style of hockey has been present. And then you put us all in this ring with a 28-game season, and then you take that away, and just, like, you put the testosterone of only a two-game weekend happening every weekend, and boys just practice, and they play two games in the weekend. Like, it was pretty hilarious, I found. Like, some wild shit that I've never seen in my life. Like, people making hits I've never seen that would never happen in any other league in the world. Like, we'd always just laugh. It was just, like, only in the CIS. That's what we'd always say. It's pretty funny.
Well, and I mean, and yeah, that's why I brought it up, but you sort of touched on it there. I mean, you know, and I know you're on, well, obviously that's how we got in touch, but I mean, I know you're on social media, and I'm going to get into it because after listening to some of your podcasts, you and I have had the same, I guess, rants on our podcast at different times about these things, but
I'm sure we do.
Yeah, well, like, you sort of brought it up. So when people out there, you know, you have the argument that, and you tell them, well, when you take away fighting, the game becomes dirtier. Of course, they look at you, you know, like you're insane. And the media people will argue with you that, no, it's cleaner, like college hockey's cleaner or whatever. Well, you sort of mentioned it there, but I mean, you know, what's your, and your response to that would be, having been a guy that's played both ways, you know, in a league that allows it, and then 5 years in a league that doesn't. I mean,
yeah. Well, I mean, I found, like, and like I played. I even played a couple exhibition games. I remember we played Cornell 1 year, and then the 1 year we played Lake Superior State, the Sioux, Michigan team there. And even though, like, that hockey is just hilarious to me, like, the most hilarious hockey I've ever seen in my life. Like, it's obviously great fast-field hockey, but, like, I'd never seen anything like it. Like, they were flying around, like, I was getting elbowed in the face. The boys are wearing cages. Like, it was sticks up in the face. Like, just stuff, like, that people don't understand until you, like, are part of it. And then I know that wasn't really what you wanted me to say, but...
No, like, it's true. Like, yeah, I mean, if it's a full cage... Like, they're like, oh, the NHL... Like, you talk to some media guys, it's like, oh, the NHL should go to full cages. It would be so much safer. You know, that's what people will say.
I know, and unfortunately, I hope that never happens, but I'm sure the way the world's going, that they'll swing that one day. But, like, definitely, like, what you said earlier about, like, the difference between, like, what I would say for a league with fighting in it and not being in it, I guess, I'm like, the NCAA is a tough example because I feel like, you know, you can fight in the USHL and stuff like that, in the leagues that a lot of these teams, you know, kids come from, but I feel like it's a little different. Like this, like the NCAA is just like, that's a bad example to, I mean, compare it to. And then like, that's a 4-year window. Like it's mean, like, it's like, I mean, I just hate when people compare, like, even like college basketball and the NBA. Like people always say, well, college basketball is more exciting. I'm like, well, it's a totally different game to begin with. So it's like, you're kind of a fan of a different being in itself. But like the difference between like, when people don't understand when they say, is it dirtier? When they laugh at you and they say that you take, you know, you take fighting out. It's not even the sense that it's just like the actual, it's not like big hits. It's not big suspension like plays. It's just like the stupid, like mundane shift to shift things that like a guy that doesn't have to worry about getting punched in the face doesn't have, you know, when you worry about getting punched in the face, you might not whack that guy in the back of the knee a couple times every other shift. You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
And that stuff just adds up over time. And like, the CIS is the most hilarious example of that in the world. Like, there's teams that are literally successful in that league because all they can do is just be little shits. When you had one, if it was, we always laugh, like, if you had one, like, if it was one normal game and you could just go literally beat the wheels off someone, like, it would change the entire league immediately. Like, yeah. The teams that would be the best teams in that league wouldn't be the best teams the second you allow fighting in. Like, there's going to be the standings would be totally different.
Yeah,
I guarantee you that. And like, I would, and people would, anyone can laugh at me. Like, I know there's a lot of analytics guys that work for all these university teams that I played against and stuff like that that would laugh at me too. But like, until you've been on the ice and you know you're not crunching, you know, score sheets and stuff like that, I mean, people will never understand. And I mean, I'm not here talking like I'm some guy that's played 25 years in NHL, but I mean, I've seen what I've seen enough to have an opinion of my own form for sure that like I understand its place in the game.
Well, I mean, you have the most unique perspective. I mean, you have the best perspective on it. I mean, you've done it all. I mean, you've been in every league that allows it. You've been in the leagues that don't allow it. You've played pro, played junior A, major junior. I mean, you have a clear window compared to anybody else. I mean, yeah, no, so you're the perfect guy to ask. And that's also why,
well,
same with Dakota Hodgers. I mean, he was the perfect guy to ask, too, because he played in the SJHL, the Western League, and then played out with you guys out in Ontario at Carleton. So it's like, yeah, well, who would know better than him, you know, or you?
No, for sure. And I mean, I guess, like, I did get a little taste of, I played a little bit in the Southern League after Nipissing.
Yep.
And, I went there for like 9 games after my 5th year, like during that, before COVID went crazy there. I went down in both February and April 2019.
Yeah, the first year was 19-20 for the 9 games. Yeah, and then 20-21 for 15. Yeah.
So I went down there, and like, I remember a bunch of my buddies that I played with were calling me and asking me, like, you know, what's the league like? Because, I mean, they're all, you know, obviously curious. A lot of people don't really, I mean, a lot of people know about the ECHL and stuff like that. But, I mean, I feel like a lot of people, like, I didn't know a lot of guys that had gone down to the Southern League. And so I never really knew what much of it would be like. So I knew a lot of my friends didn't really know anyone that had gone down either. So, like, when I went down, I had a lot of friends that were really curious. And I was like, when they asked me, I was like, they're like, what's like the skill level like? Like, what's the level of hockey like? And I was like, well, honestly, like, there's definitely like teams in the CIS that would be like the unbelievable, they would be like the best teams in the SPHL. But like, it's, you can't even compare. It's just like, again, it's a different game. I was like, there's fighting now again. And I was like, boys, like, what rules are they playing? Like, I was like, if we're playing SPHL rules, I was like, I'd probably take any SP team, almost, like, in a way. Like the game's different. Like, it's a different game. Like, and there's just a different aura around the game. It's played differently when there's, like, fighting allowed. And there's a crowd there, which, like, the CIS doesn't have. And it's just different aura. It's a different aura, and it's kind of a different animal. I mean, it's like, no disrespect to the CIS. I mean, I love the CIS. I mean, it's unbelievable 5 years. But I'm just saying, like, there's, the game would be better if there's fighting involved. I understand, well, it'll never happen at the CIS level, but to anyone's argument saying it doesn't have a real big effect on the game, it's just someone that hasn't seen it, and it's pretty wild. It's such a different bird and just a different animal completely.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and like you mentioned, you played for the Birmingham Bulls there for 9 games after you were kind of wrapping up there in college, and then you went back the following year. But what did you think of hockey down south, and Alabama? How are things in Alabama?
I had, when I ended up going there, I was trying really hard to get something going to the ECHL, and I was holding out, and then ended up signing there, and I went down there, I didn't know what to expect at all, and I had such a good time. Like, Birmingham was such an awesome spot. Birmingham was also, way bigger city than I thought. Like, I didn't know anything about Alabama. Honestly, didn't really look into it too much before I even went down, and I took my truck. And I love driving. I've been, all over, Canada, luckily, and I've always taken my truck. And this guy, oddly enough, asked if he's, would you drive down? And I was like, hell yeah, I'll drive down. So I ended up driving, which made it even that much better, making it a nice little road trip down there and down back. But I loved it. And actually, the Southern League's awesome. Great rinks, great people. Hilarious towns that I have no business. I've probably never been in my life if I never got the opportunity to go down. So, I mean, I loved it down there, and I don't think I'll be going back there this year. But it was a really good time. I loved it.
Yeah, I mean, the you went down, you played the 9 games the 1 year, and then the following year, last year, you played 15. What did? Did they let you go, or did you get hurt? What happened?
Yeah, they ended up letting me go, and it was kind of unfortunate. So I got COVID mid-February, and then the way that it was in the SP this year was once you got COVID, you had to wait 10 days, and I basically just wanted to go sit in my room for 10 days. So I went and did that, and then in the span of that happening, they got a couple bodies back from the East Coast. And, there's a lot of good play. The SP was always a pretty good league in my eyes. But this year, the SP wasn't the SP. There was only 5 teams going.
Yeah.
And, there was only 13 on the coast at the start of the season. So, the SP was pretty wild in my eyes. It was a very strong league. There's tons of good players that, again, no disrespect to the SP, but they had no business, being in that league to begin with. So this year was a little unique, and it was kind of a weird year, the off season being so long, everything getting canceled so many times. In the back of my head, it was when it was actually time to go, and we were down there, I was almost in a daze. I was I can't believe this is actually happening, because I almost expected it to get canceled. And luckily I stayed in shape, but went down there, and I didn't play great, I don't think, but had a really good time, and it was a good group of guys, and the league was really strong, and I was having fun. And then unfortunately I got COVID, a couple bodies came down, and then I came back as the 7th D for a couple nights, and then unfortunately they let me go middle of March. So I asked about half the season this year, and then it was kind of an unfortunate way to go out. And then I don't really know what's going to happen, going to keep playing or not. It's kind of tough call at the moment, but I was glad to have the opportunity to play this year, because this year was just such a shit show, and I know a lot of guys that didn't get the chance to play at all, and it was just kind of a wild year. So thankful for anything at that point.
Yeah, have you sort of it's just sort of kind of a wait and see right now, just kind of how work is going to go, and if you're going to go back, or have you kind of maybe that's it?
Well, my plan was always for, I've been pretty realistic. I've known for about over a decade longer that I'm not going to make NHL. But I always wanted to play pro, and I always knew that, for a long time now, I knew that my plan was to go to CIS and then get out and, try and play some pro wherever I could get out to. And, COVID, I think, kind of made this kind of a shit show in a way, because, that took away a lot of. A lot of things would have been different if COVID hadn't happened, and who knows would have went down. So I kind of feel like that's in the back of my head. I want to play. I got a couple offers to play. I could go back down to the Southern League in a couple different spots, and I was looking at some overseas, like, hilarious leagues to go over there just for a year, just to try it. Like, I'd like to, but I got a girlfriend, and she's kind of barking at my ass to shut her down because I've been kind of making her just, like, float around with me for a little bit. So I understand her point of view, but, you know, at the end of the day, I can't let that make my decision. God love her. And, I mean, I was even looking into potential coaching opportunities or something like that, but the end of the day, I got some decent student debt. And, I mean, I'm not making $1 million playing right now, so I got to be realistic at some point. I'm debating just also just shutting her down and getting to work full time, like 12 months a year. Enough of this, just like trying to grind my summers away as hard as I can to make ends meet through the winter. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So we're so the world, the hockey world, is waiting to see what Harrison Harper decides. The decision. Are you going to save? You're going to save that. You're going to have an exclusive on your podcast. The decision.
Yeah, I will. The problem will be it'll probably be like the day before a decision has to be made. Like I love just riding by the seat of my pants, which is a terrible way to be in a lot of things. But I mean, I find decisions like this. I mean, just kind of wait and see what happens and see as the summer goes on what how I'm feeling and. I mean, I'm one of those guys that I like to stay in shape, so I'll be staying in shape and in the gym. So if I do play, I don't have to worry about that. So hopefully, we'll see. At this point, like I said, I actually have no idea. I'd say my mind is a blender about the whole topic. Really.
Yeah, well, there you go. Well, so today, like I said at the start, you have started your podcast. It's an interesting podcast. Not a hockey podcast. It's not a political podcast, as you said many times in the episodes I was listening to. But you sort of just, you know, whatever the topics of the day are and talk a few different things. You've had finance on there and the whole nine yards, and you do talk some hockey. What made you get into the podcast? Well, I know you took marketing, which I found weird that you took marketing in university. But then you're saying on the podcast that you don't really understand the whole marketing on social media type of thing, which was odd to hear.
Yeah. Well, no, I guess I originally was like going to go to school. Like my plan was to go to, I was going to do like broadcasting when I went to school originally. Like I wanted to get into radio or something like that.
Yeah.
It was always my plan, or like even do like play by play. It was like something I thought I would want to do maybe after I played or something like that. But, ended up, like, when it was time to go to school, I was like, I don't want to go to school for 2 years and do a diploma for radio. And then, like, what am I going to do with that if it doesn't work out? So I was like, can't do that. I didn't know what to do. So I ended up doing a business degree. I took marketing. That was my major. The major in that in human resources. And I ended up just liking marketing, and that was the way I went for it. And then I ended up getting involved with a podcast. Because I was like always, I was interested in podcasts because I didn't go to school for radio. And then the way I was seeing everything go with all these podcasts, like a little late to the game, I was like, well, I can just do a podcast. Like, I don't need to go to school. I was like, I don't really care what I do with it. Like, no one listens to it. I don't care. Like, it'll just kind of be, it's always something I wanted to do. So I started out with a little university podcast that I did with a buddy, a fellow student athlete at the school that he played soccer and I was on the hockey team. And me and him just got together and made a little podcast for the school, started out doing sports, then we started doing, like, school news, and, I mean, that was pretty straight-edge, pretty boring stuff if you didn't go to the school, but, I mean, it was something to start. We did, like, something like 40 episodes over two school years, and it was pretty fun, and then when after that ended, I was like, I didn't know what to do, and then this was about a year ago, and I just kind of was like, well, like, I had buddies I was on the phone with, like, talking about doing a podcast, but, like, in my head, I was like, I know how unorganized I am, and, like, we don't all live in the same city, like, we all have a bunch of different shit going. I was like, the reality of us being able to get a weekly show out with, like, me and two co-hosts was, like, 0%, so I was like, in my head, I was, like, a little narcissistic. I was like, well, I kind of like just talking to myself anyway sometimes, so why don't I just do it and ramble on to myself? If I don't have a guest, I'll just literally talk to myself for the whole episode if I have to. And I was like, well, I'll just try it. And, like, if no one listens to it, like, at least I'll just keep getting better and better. And I mean, I don't really have a, like, that's why I call it the project, because, like, it's a project. Like, I don't really have a clue what I'm doing with it. I just kind of go on, and sometimes I have guests, sometimes I talk about sports, or just kind of talk about whatever, just kind of whatever goes on. So it's kind of all over the place, but I have a good time doing it. I mean, I'm going to keep doing it. Got to get more episodes out, though. It's been tough to get a weekly show going. It's hard to get them out every week.
Yeah, yes, it is. Yeah. Wow, and it's funny listening to you tell your story. We're sort of kindred spirits in that regard, because, yeah, same thing. I mean, I'm obviously a lot older than you are, but, yeah, I mean, when I left high school, that was I was wanting to go into radio. And I kind of did an open house, and I did a, you know, whatever, an internship and stuff. And then I think a bunch of the radio guys basically talked me out of it. Because back then, this is the early 90s, right? Or kind of mid-90s. I mean, there was no one had ever thought of satellite radio or anything like that. So, you know, it was just AM, FM, right? And, yeah, so I remember just, they kind of, they're like, dude, there's no money in it. You know, you're going to be doing the AM up in, like, you know, Duck Lake somewhere, you know, and I'm like, oh, you know, because for some reason you have it in your head, like, oh, I'm going to be doing the morning drive show in Calgary, right, when I'm done, won't I? You know, it's just like, you have this stupid, yeah. You know, and then it was kind of like, well, I don't really want to do that. So I never pursued it. But yeah, then I saw that podcasting could sort of be, you know, the hobby, like, fix my radio dream, I guess, sort of, so to speak. So, yeah, no, so it was funny when you mentioned that it was very much, I was on the same, I had the same sort of mindset. But, well, listening to your shows, like I said, I listened to a bunch of them today in the truck, and you're an amusing dude. You make me laugh. You're one of the big, you got to be one of the more famous alumni of Joey Tomatoes, apparently. But wasn't that your first job?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. That was my first. That was my first ever restaurant job. Yeah. I was a fresh 18-year-old.
There you go. But your one of your hockey ones that you were talking about, and like I said, it was funny because I had brought that up on one of my episodes as well. We'll get into the Austin Matthews, because I know you're a Leaf guy. We'll get into that in a second. But the first one I wanted to bring up, it was funny, because I was getting in and out of the truck, and right when I was getting into the truck, I hear you yell, "The Code." And it cracked me up, because I've yelled about The Code forever on my show. And you, coming from a different generation, a younger generation, you had said on the show that you had never heard that term. Like, so... So for the listeners out there, when you were in the Lethbridge Hurricanes dressing room or Miramichi or whatever, no one ever talked about The Code to you?
No, I feel like, I don't know, like I feel like I obviously know what it is, and like thinking back, like, I don't think anyone ever talked about The Code, maybe The Code might have meant, like, I feel like some guys thought if a guy was down, you wouldn't punch him once or twice, like, while he's on the ice. But then, like, if you saw a guy do it, you'd just be like, oh, this guy's nails. Like, this guy's tough. He doesn't give a shit. Like, it wasn't like, oh, he broke the fucking code. Like, there's no talk like that. Like, I mean, maybe there's an imaginary boundary of what you shot should be right. But if someone went over it, like, what are you going to do about it? You either address it or you don't. There's no code. Like, you know what I mean? It's just like, I just find it's just like a hilarious made up term. Like, what's the code? And like, everyone talks about it. I'm like, well, it's like an easy tagline for the media to like label a type of behavior that like everyone will know what they're talking about. So I feel like that's why it ever got started. But like, I don't know. I just like, no, never heard any talk of the code when I'm playing ever.
I laugh because you were going off on Farhan Lougie.
Oh. Oh my god. Well, it's like I love media. I just found like, I don't know when it turned, and I feel like when I was young, like, I'm only 27 right now, but like when I was younger watching like SportsCenter and stuff, it was more like we just kind of watched the game and we celebrated it. And now it's like we always had this emphasis on like analysis and like breaking everything down. And now that means, like, we have guys that, like, literally know nothing about the sport, like breaking it down. And then, like, unfortunately, we have hilarious apps like Twitter where these boneheads like get in exchanges with like literal nobodies, and they're like supposed to be broadcasters, and they're arguing with nobodies on their Twitter. It makes me like, honestly, it makes me so happy. Like, these people make money to have like important opinions, and they're arguing their opinions with people that don't even have real profile pictures on Twitter. Like, it's fucking amazing. But it just makes me laugh, like, how it's all gone. So it's gone pretty sideways, like, the media standpoint. Like, it's just like, how do you take anyone seriously anymore? Like, you can't. And then when you actually get a guy that you, like, want to listen to that's good about talking about hockey, it's like you almost don't even care anymore because everything's so awful.
Oh, yeah. Like, I've said a million times, it's like, you know, as much as social media, I need to be on social media, whatever, to promote the show and all that stuff. It's just like, it's sort of that necessary evil if you're going to do a podcast. But it's like, oh, the cesspool that is hockey Twitter, it just drives me up the wall. And especially when you get old, when you're older, and it's like, you have some 18-year-old douchebag telling you, it's like, you don't get it, bro. It's like, oh, I'm going to kill you. I want to kill you. You know, it's just, it's embarrassing.
Yeah, well, I always wonder this about other sports too. Like, is if you're like a big baseball fan and you're on like baseball from looking at Twitter or something like that, and if you just see a bunch of nonsense going on Twitter, like, is it as aggravating as it is for like hockey fans sometimes? Because I feel like hockey is such a unique game. I feel like it's so easily misunderstood. That's probably why it's never really gotten like the following. Maybe we all feel it should have in North America, because it is a very complex game. Like, if you didn't know what the hell was going on, you showed up to a hockey game, you'd probably be like, what in the world is happening? You'd have no clue. Like, I feel like I know multiple girls in my life, girls and guys, and a bunch of people who aren't really around the game that much, still don't understand hockey at all, that I've known like my whole life. And, like, they're Canadians. Like, it's a complex game. Like, I just find like there's so much more that goes into it. I feel like might get lost on people, and like when you're on Twitter, it shows so easily to me. It just like blows my mind. Like, it's just like, are other sports easier to like just be a casual fan of, or is that why hockey's so aggravating as like an actual hockey fan, to see people that know nothing about it speak on it like so hilariously?
Well, one of the topics that you had talked about on your show that really hit home with me, and like I said, I find like our hockey takes, we just mirror each other like the whole time. When I was listening to your show, it was like, you had brought up how, and it's true, and I've said the same thing, the NHL, out of all the major sports, I find anyway, and like, and you said it perfectly on your show, was they just cater to the casual fan, or they just try to alter everything to the casual fan. I've always said, I've never seen a league try so hard to alienate their hardcore fans as the NHL does.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's embarrassing. And it's just like, it's not even casual fans. It's like they're marketing to people who will like never even be fans in the first place, and will never, they market to people that they'll never make money off of. Like, yep. They don't market to the people that would spend the money to go, and they don't take time to show its case to the people that might actually be interested in it. No, they try to like polish their image for like the three people that might be upset when something happens. Like,
well, that's like Bissonnette was saying. He goes, "That's the NHL caters to the vocal minority on Twitter."
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, "It's just ridiculous."
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And there's always going to, especially nowadays, like, it's like there's going to be a vocal minority. But if you have a following, there's going to be a vocal minority. And it's like, yeah, you have to respect them, and like, you don't disrespect these people, but at the same time, like, there's going to be no there's going to be no art anymore if we just let every single thing that's wrong, like, it's going to just wash everything away. There'll be no point in anything.
Yeah, no, I know. I hear you. No, and I kind of want, that's, like I said, one of the reasons why I wanted to get you on, of course, is just, you know, with my show, when I have players on, of course, most of the time they're older guys that played in the minors, you know, or wherever, played hockey back in the 90s and stuff, right? So we're all like in our 40s and 50s. So that's why I wanted to have you on and Dakota on and stuff like that, because you guys in your mid 20s, sort of that different generation. I wanted to get your take on a lot of things. And it was funny, like I said, listening to your show, how you and I, despite the 20-year age difference, how we just, how we mirror each other in terms of our thoughts on the game. And it was, no, that's why, like I said, that's why I wanted to have you on. But I also, you were also talking about being a Leaf guy, a Leafs fan, and you were kind of giving it to old Dubas there in his calculators, and you were saying it's tough to be an Auston Matthews fan these days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'm a Leafs fan, grew up in Calgary. I'm not joking. I don't think I knew a single other kid that was a Leafs fan my whole childhood. Like, I used to get tormented as a kid, but I stayed strong. I do like the Flames, too, but no, I am a Leafs fan first and foremost, and I always will be, but I mean, it's tough, I'll be honest. It's really tough these days, and, like, I love, I was all for the team that they built at the time, but, like, when you just repetitively see them, like, perform the way they have in the playoffs, and then you just, like, it's like maybe the ingredients don't really mix that well right now. Like, something's got to change, and, I mean, I'm no GM. I don't build hockey teams or anything like that, but the way that they've, I guess the NHL as a whole too, the way they've just gotten used to just paying these young guys before they've really done much. And I'm not saying they haven't done anything. They'll have great seasons. They'll put up a lot of points. You know, they might win a Rocket Richard trophy and whatnot, like Auston Matthews just did. But like, that matters for sure, and like that's great, and you know that's what you want. But like, if the goal is not to win the Stanley Cup, then like, what's the point of all these bells and whistles? Like in my eyes, I just think it's a waste of time. Like, I mean, it's just ridiculous to me how they built this team. I feel like in Toronto, like you couldn't even rebuild right now and sell the farm if you wanted to, because all these contracts, like no one would even take them. And like, I when you're asking me about my Auston Matthews comment. Like, I did. I lost a little bit of respect for him this playoffs. And it was, like, the moment I really talked about, which I'm sure you're probably referencing on my show, oh. Darren, was that moment when they're playing Montreal. And, like, I don't remember if it was game two or three. You know, the Leafs were, I think, up at the time. But, like, or they might have been down at the time. And anyways, it was on home ice. I think it was Ben Chiarot. Or, like, someone, like, grabbed him from behind, like, kind of horse collared him, was pulled him around, and like CBC camera zoomed right in on him, like slow-mo'd it, and he's just like smiling and giggling. And I saw this thing happen a couple different times in a couple different scrums, and like, correct me if I'm wrong, where did Auston Matthews have one goal in that series? I think he had one goal in that series. Like,
yeah.
He was an absolute passenger. He was an absolute ghost. This guy's laughing on home ice, showing no jam, no fire, no pushback at all. These guys like taking advantage of him on his own rink. This guy's supposed to be the man, the Rocket Richard trophy winner. The guys are just grabbing him and tossing him around by his jersey. And he's not even pissed. That's the thing. Like, why would anyone stand up for him on his team? Like, he doesn't even care. It's like a joke to him too. And then they go on and lose that series and everyone's the passenger up. And I feel like that, in my eyes, that was like a turning point of the series. I was like, this is embarrassing. And, like, the moment that series ended, I just couldn't stop thinking back to that moment. I mean, like, kind of makes me be like, I mean, not lose respect for Auston Matthews, but, like, that moment will stick in my mind. Like, he has to show me something this year, for sure. And at the end of the day, who the fuck am I? I'm a nobody. But as a Leafs fan, I've never seen it like this. Like, I've been up to Timmins. I've been down to in Toronto. I've been around Ontario. A lot of Leafs fans. I've never seen this much unrest. I've never seen it like this in Leafs Nation. This is some serious, like, lost fandom in the heart of Leafs Nation. Like, there's, like, not to sound dramatic, like, I know some, like, people who say that they got their uncles have taken down all the pictures off the wall. Multiple reports of behavior like this going on around Leafs Nation. So it's not even... It's not just me crying the blues right now. A lot of people are upset in Leafland.
Well, it was so funny when you talked about the Austin Matthews thing, because I was laughing, because, yeah, I remember when I brought it up on my show, because I kept seeing on hockey Twitter all these Leaf fans, they kept showing the, yeah, they would show the, what is it, GIF or meme, whatever the hell it is, the GIF of Matthews laughing, yeah, along with, like, the Joker from the Batman movies. And they're like, oh, he's like the Joker, you know, whatever. And I'm like, and I said to the one guy, I said, you do realize at the end of the movie, the Joker lost, right? Like,
yeah.
Well, and then look what happened, right? I was like, oh, karma, you know, foreshadowing. But it was, no, when you brought that up on your show, I was laughing, because it was like, yeah, exactly, you know. But, you know, because I brought, like I said, I had mentioned it on social media. Of course, like, oh, yeah, whatever, boomer, and you don't get it and whatever. So then to hear you say it, too, it was like, well, there you go. I'm not, at least I'm not the only crazy one that thought that way anyway.
No, and, like, I mean, maybe I'm being a little over-dramatic about that, but, like, I thought that was pretty poor in my eyes, and I don't know. Just makes me laugh. I mean, he better win the Rocket Richard again next year, or they better sell him somewhere.
Well, I was going to say, like, on your years of playing, you're sitting on the bench in Lethbridge or Miramichi, and, like, something like that goes on, and one of your guys sitting there, like, wouldn't the boys just, like, so you're at, you know, like I said, you're down at the Boulevard after the game or Mike's, would you just kind of look at the guy and go, what the fuck were you doing? Like, you know,
yeah.
Would you call the dude out?
I just don't think that would ever happen. Like, I just don't think that would ever happen. I don't know. Then again, I don't play in the NHL. So
yeah, well, I mean, when I grew up with the Leafs, it was like, I said, I don't think I'd ever see Doug Gilmore and Wendell Clark laughing in a scrum. It just never would happen. So, I don't know. It's 2021.
Even like Mario Lemieux or someone like that, like, they'd be turning around being like, who the hell's grabbing me, like, with this disrespect?
Yeah.
Like, that's what I, like, it would just be like, I just would be handled differently. I certainly don't think like that, but who knows, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, man, I won't keep you very long. I know you've had a long day today, and it's late out there. So, I mean, I certainly want to get you back on the show. I got a bunch of stuff I'd like to talk to you about. But again, your podcast, the Podject. What do you got on board? Like, what do you see going forward with your show? What do you see for your show? What do you want to do with it?
Truthfully, I don't really. I just want to be able to talk about anything and everything, and have guests on of all sort. I'm looking at trying to make some money here, working hard, trying to get it settled in here with some, make some good money here in the next couple of years of work, and then. My plan is to, like, kind of get a house, get my own spot with, get some sort of, like, hilarious, built in some studio in there, and just kind of have, just keep going with it. I want it to be weekly, and, I mean, I don't really care how big it gets. I mean, I feel like I do all right for how much I put into it right now. Like, I got a lot of good, a lot of people I know will listen to it, and, I mean, I'm surprised sometimes by the people, by the numbers I get on it from, like, not really working too hard on it, but, just going to keep going with that. I'm really poor right now at it. Like, I've been getting into, like, been just working a lot this summer, and, like, unfortunately that's been the priority at the moment, and sometimes I've been on the road, too, and, like, I was trying to get in touch with you weeks ago. I was up in Timmins working, didn't even have Wi-Fi, so I've been running into some situations like that that I feel like the normal podcaster doesn't have to endure, but I've been pretty good. I mean, I was doing episodes when I was down in Alabama playing. So wherever I go, I'm going to try to make it work. So that's the plan anyways. I'm just going to keep it going, really, is the plan.
Yeah, I found as I've gone on here and done it for a little while, I think, yeah, consistency definitely helps. Like when people can rely on, okay, every Thursday or whatever, a show is going to come out, you know, and I think that definitely helps. But I think for the listeners out there, I think, and I say, I've said too, I naively went into it thinking this is going to be a lot easier than I thought it would be. It actually turned out it's actually a bit of work to do this.
Oh, yeah. You can't just, like, upload it. And, like, even, like, when I was lucky when I had that little podcast I mentioned in university, I did a lot of talking on that show. I kind of decided a lot of the direction of the show. But my buddy was like the editor. He did all the editing. So my show started out with, even to this day, I do a lot of my podcasts where I just press go and I just press stop. If it's just me, I just do that. And then I usually don't edit anything, but I've had to teach myself, unfortunately, how to do all this editing stuff that I never planned on learning how to do.
Yeah, I'm not big on editing either. I just sort of let it go. But I think just in terms of, I mean, it's one thing when you have an interview, okay, like, I mean, I'll do the research on the guy, but I mean, that's just that's, you know, stats and rosters. That's not a real big deal. But I find when I do, like, on my Sunday shows, when it's just a rant episode, so to speak, that's actually tougher. Because you actually sort of have, obviously, you have to come up with topics that people will find at least, well, you think they're, you hope that they find interesting anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've had a few episodes where I had nothing really planned. I just sort of hit record. Oh, I'll just talk and it'll come to me. And it's just a fucking train wreck. Like, it's like, no, I got to have some bullet points written down or something.
Yeah, I find you got to have some direction, but then, like, almost you don't want a script in my eyes, because then if you have a script, I find you go off your script and you start panicking and then you're not really focused on just speaking. So, I mean, it's good to have a direction, I find, and then just kind of let yourself, you know, go and flow wherever it flows after that, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, man, I'll let you go. Like I said, thank you very much for coming on the show. Harrison Harper, folks, definitely check out his show, The Podject. It's on all major platforms. Harrison, thank you again for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Hey, no, thank you so much. And we'll definitely have to do this again. And maybe one day soon we'll have to have you on The Podject or something.
There you go. If you ever want to plunge those ratings, get me on there. I'll help you out.
There you go. Absolutely.
All right, Matt, I'll let you go. Have a good night.
Sounds good. Talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, Harrison.
And you people that don't like fighting, how many of you did you walk out and get a coffee while that was on?